All right, we'll call the Judiciary Committee meeting back into order. At this time, the chair recognizes Representative Losee for Senate File 2368.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2368 is a bill that would prohibit cities and counties from adopting ordinances that would require landlords to accept Section 8 housing vouchers as a form of payment. We had the subcommittee on this meeting, on this particular bill a few days before we recessed in March. Haven't given a lot of thought over the last 2 months, quite frankly. And when we came back, obviously yesterday, knew we were going to run this today. I've really lost a lot of sleep as to what the proper whether or not this statute is proper and how exactly this thing should go. What this bill really does is talk about the difference and the intersection of city planning, the city's ability and need to manage its housing stock and do proper city planning versus the rights of individual property owners and doing what they need to do with what they decide to do with their property. Where I've come to the conclusion, just, and I apologize, Representative Wilburn, I've changed my mind since yesterday when we talked, and that came about 5 o'clock this morning while I was going through this in my head. So where I've landed on this particular bill is that cities have this right and this need. And I was on city council for 12 years in Bondurant. And I understand how the need for having a diverse residential market is how important that is. And especially important in cities like Des Moines and Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. In Bondurant, we had one class of housing. So we worked for 12 years to try to diversify that particular, diversify the housing stock in particular. We worked our butts off to try to find ways to do that. But one of the things that we could not do constitutionally and under the law, we can't go further and take someone's property rights without compensating them. It's called eminent domain, and I love eminent domain. I would prefer to use it as frequently as possible. But when we use eminent domain, you got to pay for it. That's fine. But where we're missing the point with this particular, where it comes into nexus with this particular bill is the property owner has a voluntary ability to engage in a federal program, where a city is trying to require a property owner to enter into a voluntary program. That to me becomes a taking. And that becomes something that becomes inappropriate as a tool to properly manage your city's housing stock or any other decision. Therefore, that's what this bill is about, is to say property owners' rights and their ability to enter into a federal voluntary program take precedence over a city's need to manage their city. That's what this bill does. Cities are not prohibited under this section from using other tools in their toolkit in order to entice people, entice property owners, and to encourage them to use a carrot to get them to say, hey, I'll participate in that program. They have the ability to enter into developers' agreements with apartment owners as they're building, as they're developing a new housing. They have the ability to provide tax incentives that say, hey, listen, we need this housing stock. We'll encourage you to do that. They simply can't require you to do that. And that's what this bill is saying. And that's all this bill is saying. And it's an important nexus and a step that we cannot allow cities to take as they're dealing with individual property owners. Those are my opening comments, and I'd entertain any questions.
Is there discussion? The chair recognizes Representative Wilburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll take that up for a second. Don't get close to me, Bruce. I want to thank Representative Losee for having me pause and think about eminent domain. I'm glad you didn't call me at 5 o'clock this morning to do so. We all can vary on opinion, and I, in my opinion, you're reading a little bit too far and drawing the parallel in terms of eminent domain and what this bill does, because the bill says a city or a county can't have a landlord refuse to rent to a person solely on not being willing to accept the housing choice voucher. And the other thing that comes to mind, actually it's a question if, Brian, if Representative Losee, if you would yield for a couple questions. Okay, I too was on a city council for 12 years, and we had a housing authority, a public housing authority, and we also had a housing department. Does Bondurant have a housing department?
No, we don't.
Okay, and does part of the reason that cities are wanting to do this is relating to the affordable housing issue, just as you described. But what cities that do have public housing authorities have found is that some tenants, aren't able to even get into the door because they're being rejected for factors other than their ability to, credit check, no history of violence, abuse, that type of thing. And what they found is it comes down to some of the protected classifications. And the majority of, everyone in participating in the program as a potential tenant has to be low income. And both in the state of Iowa and nationally, the majority of the users are older, in our case, older Iowans. They are people of color, significantly across the state and, I believe, in Iowa as well, African American. There are also a significant proportion that are persons living with a disability. And there are veterans, a smaller percentage, but I think nationally it's 3% of veterans participated in the Housing Choice Program. And so that's about discrimination based on protected class. And in Iowa City, we had a civil rights commission, human rights commission. Does Bondurant have a human rights commission?
No, we don't.
Okay, and so one, it's difficult to prove in general that someone would be discriminated based upon a protected, it can be unless it's something overt and obvious, and this is Iowa, and hopefully most wouldn't. But I think that's, you can have a seat. Those are all the questions. You've been up late, so I don't want to fatigue you anymore. What ends up happening is that other claims go about, and the individual can't even get in the door to have an opportunity to have a screening done in some cases. In other cases, the screening may be done and another tenant may have come up, or just the discretion. And so it can be challenging, especially in a community that does not have a human rights or civil rights commission. Now, granted, there is the state, but their caseload is full and frequently full. And in the meantime, there's someone who may want to move to a community with a job, and they are low income. And we don't have the statewide minimum wage is not such, and some of these jobs that are coming to communities are such that an individual is not able to afford the rent without it being more than the 30 to 35%, whatever the percentage is, in order to participate in the program. Some of the complaints that I heard from the one or two individuals or groups who showed up that had concern, the landlords, was about whether or not they would get payment from the tenant, and In this particular case, this program has been modified over the years so that payment goes directly from the public housing authority, the local housing authority, to the landlord. And so that payment, waiting for that voucher, is not the case. If it's the case where, rather than every 30 days, that landlord is needing that voucher every 15 days, you know, I don't know that they have a lease, a 15-day lease where someone needs to pay, and I'm just about finished here, Mr. Chair, but, you know, that would be something they could work out with that local housing authority. So, I guess, bottom line, I don't support this, one, because some of the concerns that came up were addressed years ago, and some people were working on old scripts. They didn't necessarily participate in the program, or they're not as a their community does not participate in the in a housing program, authority program, and so they're going on some old messages and old scripts about some of the problems. But the problems in administering this program were handled years ago, and it's the case not only to qualify to receive the voucher, but you as a landlord, you can run your background check, you can run your credit check, and you can deny a voucher, or you can deny renting based on that. But again, because of one, some cities not having access to following up on whether any protected classes would be discriminated on, and two, you know, some of the communities, it's not just the larger communities. I believe even Clinton might have been one of the communities that was attempting to do one of these. They've got to have a place for people to live. I will thank you for at least the further conversation that we had, Representative Losi, and I would encourage members to not support this, regardless of party, not support this if you have concern about how cities are going to be able to address housing stock and affordability for their community members to live and work in the same community. Thank you.
The chair recognizes Representative Wolf.
Chair. Oh, there we go. Would Representative Losi yield for a couple of questions? Thank you. Representative Losi, I wasn't real familiar with this whole situation until today, so I just have a couple of questions. First of all, the HUD vouchers, or is that the same thing as Title VIII or Section 8?
Section 8, yes.
Okay. And so it's a landlord who receives a Section 8 voucher in exchange for allowing someone to rent his or her apartment. It's money, right? It's the same money as if that tenant had wrote him a check. Is that correct?
Essentially, yes.
Okay. So basically a landlord who gets a Section 8 voucher is paid in the same currency as he or she would be paid by any other tenant, correct?
It has the same effect, yeah.
Okay. And it's fair to say that Section 8 housing is restricted to people who are lower income, is that right?
That's my understanding of the program, yes.
And it assists them in paying their living expenses so they're able to afford to live in an apartment, correct?
Yeah, I think that's the actual stated goal of the Section 8 housing bill.
So a number of organizations are registered against the bill, and I'd just like to ask you what you know about why they're registered against the bill, because I didn't have a chance to ask them. As a bill manager, I'm hoping you know. American Heart Association is registered against. Do you know why?
I just got an email this morning from someone at American Heart Association. I believe essentially her concern is related to the impact on people's health and the possible increase of heart attacks and strokes.
Okay.
I can pull up the email and send it to you if you want.
Okay. So that if they're not able to find a place to live and they have to live out on the streets, they might be more likely to have a stroke. Is that it?
I'm assuming that's where she's going, but I don't want to speak for her.
Okay.
For sure.
Iowa Alliance for Retired Americans. I assume it's because a lot of retired Americans are lower income, might need Section 8 vouchers and this bill might make it more difficult to find apartments that accept Section 8 vouchers. Is that
fair? I would assume that's their thinking.
And United Way of Central Iowa, were you able to talk to that lobbyist, and do they have a specific concern that they shared with you?
As a matter of fact, I had a good conversation with Dave Stone. I believe that's probably the lobbyist that registered, and Dave participates in the program. He loves the program, but he also shared the same concerns that others had about the availability of housing.
Okay, thank you, Representative Losey. Okay, in addition to those, also registered against are, the Iowa Conference of United Methodist Church, several cities, the Episcopal Diocese of Iowa, Iowa Mental Health Planning Council, and Iowa Association of Community Providers, Iowa Association of Area Agencies on Aging, and some other faith-based organizations, the League of Cities, National Alliance on Mental Illness. So I guess, I respect and appreciate all of the work that these organizations do to help our most vulnerable Iowans, people with mental health issues, people, again, retired people who live on a fixed income and who need safe, affordable housing. And Section 8 HUD is a program that assists them with that. There's no point in having a Section 8 program in a community if none of the landlords will cooperate and allow people that are utilizing vouchers to rent from them. And I just think that since it is money, the same money as for all intents and purposes is what any other tenant would pay them, I don't understand why we would allow landlords to basically discriminate against people who are using HUD housing. Certainly, landlords would continue to have all of the same rights to refuse to rent an apartment to a tenant that is unsuitable for all of the reasons, the same reasons that any landlord is allowed to refuse to rent to any tenant. This bill would just allow them to include on the list of things like violent criminal records, drug use, horrible credit. It would allow them to include using a Section 8 voucher as a legitimate reason to refuse someone the right to rent an apartment. And I think being low income in and of itself should not be a valid reason to refuse someone the right to rent an apartment. So I'll be a no.
The chair recognizes Representative Alderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also am going to oppose this bill. We certainly are doing sort of what feels like a systematic move toward more discriminatory legislation this week, which is I find sort of interesting. But I did want to point out that this is really also a lot about local control, and a city does not have to participate in HUD housing program. That is totally a voluntary decision on the city's part, and if a city chooses not to be a participant in it, so be it. And if local citizens don't like the fact that their city is participating, then they have a governing body they can go to and talk to about that. And speak through that local governing body. So on top of the fact I find it a pretty discriminatory piece of legislation, I also think we are once again picking away at local control. Thanks.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair recognizes Representative Losey for closing remarks on Senate File 2368.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make this brief. I appreciate Representative Olson, you mentioning how the cities can choose to do this. So if they can choose to participate and make this available, why can't landlords, why can't property owners choose? Because as court case after court case has pointed out, this is a voluntary program. This is a voluntary program for landowners to decide whether or not they want to participate and accept this form of payment.
I'm not saying that a city does not have needs. Cities do have needs to provide affordable housing, and there's a great need in a number of cities that this is an important piece. But they have other tools in order available to them, tools that are not ones that mandate acceptance and participation in a federally voluntary program. That has to be a major consideration, and that is a major consideration. We can't lose sight of that. This is a voluntary program. Case after case reiterates that people can jump into the program, people can jump out of the program, and even if there's a court case out there that says even if there's a disparate impact, which we don't like that as a result, but even if there is a disparate impact because someone jumps out of the program, that's completely permissible because it is a voluntary program. So again, we come down to property owner rights versus local control, and I'm with you on the local control, Representative Olson. I'm a city guy at heart. But let's let them use the tools that they have to incentivize people to get into the program and to encourage people to use the program rather than beating them over the head, property owners over the head with it and requiring it when it's probably impermissible at all for them to require it. So those are my closing comments. I do represent Representative Wilburn, Representative Jones. I appreciate all of your input. I truly appreciate the conversations we've had, Representative Wilburn, on this. Appreciate your open mind and be thinking about these issues. With that, I move the bill.
Representative Losey moves. Senate File 2368. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Holt. Representative Height. Representative Wolf. Representative Bennett. Representative Bergen. Representative Derry. Representative Gustafson. Representative Hagenow. Representative Jacobson. Representative Jones. Representative Kaufman. Representative Klein. Representative Confirst. Representative Losey. Representative Meyer. Representative Mitchell.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Poshton.
Aye.
Representative Wessel Crichel.
No.
Representative Wilburn.
No.
The vote is 12 yea, 9 nay.
With 12 yes and 9 no, the bill is approved and will move to the full body for consideration. To my knowledge, this will be our last committee meeting of this session. I suppose it's possible something could come up and we'll have another one, but to my knowledge, this could well be our last committee meeting for the year. It's certainly been an interesting and different year that I suspect we will all remember. With that, Representative Wolf, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
It's certainly been quite a session. Thank you.
Is there any further business to come before the committee today? Seeing none, Representative Mitchell moves, we rise.